baby coming hot like I'm hopping off the griddle. Pull up on a kid if you're trying to get belittled. All the mamas love me now, I think I'm being brittle. Flex the rainbow.
Welcome to Plates and Pancakes. We're sitting down with Di Manuel. Di is from Vancouver, Canada. He's an award-winning digital thought leader and author of Whole Life Fitness Manifesto. He is a distinguished Toastmaster and keynote speaker. Di works in the fitness industry as a coach, trainer, and was co-founder of Fitness Town, a successful chain of fitness equipment. What's Vancouver like this time of year?
Well, you know, our climate's just like Seattle, you know, and with the exception, we're a little bit closer to the mountains, you know, the Rockies. And so this time of year, it's pretty cold. It's above freezing today, which is nice. And the sun's shining today, which is also nice because that's a treat. Pacific Northwest, most people are probably aware it's a rainforest, right? So this time of year, it's usually pretty wet, pretty gray.
I know very little about it. I know it has an incredible food scene, and I know the sturgeon up there are great.
Oh, yes. Yeah, especially up the Vancouver Islands. Yeah, there's some hot spots there. I have a couple friends that are really big into sturgeon fishing, and they're always talking about it, and at least during the season. So it's the end of season now. But yeah, man, there's some pretty big sturgeon up here, I'll tell you that.
Now, you grew up on the other side of Canada, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. Just outside of Toronto in Ontario and, you know, just north of New York State there. When I turned 18, graduated high school, and I was like, you know, I'm moving west. Bye, guys. And I literally just moved it to Vancouver. I haven't looked back since. I'm now 46. So I like to think that I've been here all my life, but at least all my adult life, you know.
So how's your French?
Je parle français aussi, oui. I'm pretty good. I was in French immersion, actually, while I lived in Ontario. So right from kindergarten all the way through, and even my first couple of years of university, I still maintained my French. But since graduating, I'm more so just conversational and reading, but my grammar sucks. I'm almost embarrassed to speak French most of the time because I know grammatically I make a lot of errors.
I'm sure if you're not using it every day, it kind of goes away.
It can, but every once in a while I pull it out and the kids seem impressed, but that's about it, you know?
So at 18, you moved across the country, and I talk to different athletes and we talk about different schools and stuff like that they think about going to. And that is a incredibly scary idea to leave your parents, move clear across the country and take up a new life. How did that present itself?
It was school. And I gotta give it to my dad. You know, he passed 5 years ago from pancreatic cancer. But back in when I was a teen, I guess it was right around when I was 17. And, you know, you're sort of finishing you can see the end, right? You can see graduation coming down the pipe. And you start thinking about post-secondary, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, as kids, what do you think? It's like, gosh, what am I going to do? It's like, I definitely had a big question mark. And my dad, he planted a seed. He's like, well, what do you think about Vancouver? Why don't you apply to a school out there? And I was like, wow, I didn't really think of that. Because I was only applying to universities in Ontario. You know, mm-hmm. I wasn't even thinking I'd leave in the province. But he planted that seed. I was someone that was active. I enjoyed mountain biking. I also loved rock climbing. Because of that, there's very little to do that. You had to drive quite a ways to get access, especially to rock climbing living in Ontario. Most of that rock climbing was done indoors there. I was like, wow, that would actually be really cool to live near the mountains, you know, near Whistler, and to have that outdoor lifestyle. Lucky enough, I late admission. It was like, oh gosh, middle of August. It's about 2 weeks before the semester starts. And I'm like, gosh, I guess I didn't get in. You know, I was sweating bullets because I was like, geez, there goes that idea. I wasn't willing to just move if I wasn't going to go to school. That was that big draw. I got the letter saying, yeah, you're in. And I was like, holy smokes. I had like 10 days to get there so I could be there at the start of the school year. And my dad, again, stepped up, helped me get things organized. He actually came out with me, helped me find a place to live, got me set up. We went to IKEA, bought a bunch of stuff, and hung out with me for the week, got me settled in. And then he went back home and that was it, you know, and just started my life here and literally never looked back. I think I only went back maybe a half dozen times in the last 20 plus years.
Now, Canada, I don't know. I've never been up there. I don't know how it is. I know down here from one coast to the other, there's quite a bit of change in culture. Is sure. Canada a lot like that?
You know, Toronto is very much fast paced. It's our largest city in Canada, population wise. I'd equate it to sort of that Chicago, Boston, kind of New York feel from just a pacing standpoint, and also from the types of people that live there. They tend to be a lot more, it's just a lot more hustle and bustle. West Coast, it is a lot more laid back. You definitely can see the difference depending on the circles that you tend to, you know, hang out in. I always tell people, come visit in the summer because there's nothing like it. It's of course, I'm biased. It's just a wonderful place. And, you know, Seattle's great, too. California's beautiful as well. Like, I find the beauty. It doesn't matter where I go, but Vancouver's home.
So you got out there and kind of started your life, and you ended up doing very well in the fitness industry. But as far as being fit, what the research I've done kind of on you, you wasn't always fit. Yeah. How was you able to start from being an overweight kid, moving clear up to the fitness industry, and now helping people?
Thanks for the question there, Stephen. You know, like anybody, we all have these great journeys, right? Definitely for me, there was no straight lines. You know, it was a lot of over-unders, back and forth. I had a very sedentary lifestyle. And at age 9, my parents separated, ultimately divorced. That rocked my world. The 80s, I mean, we didn't have the internet. We didn't have a lot of places to go to have conversations about divorce, right? Because it wasn't the normal. Like today, unfortunately, you know, you look at statistics around relationships, like there's a lot of support networks for when couples break up, and you can have places for the kids to go and speak to people or connect with other kids that are going through something similar. You know, there's only one other kid in my class that didn't have his parents together any longer. So, you know, a class of 30 kids, you can get this, right? There's like two of us that don't have our parents together. Like, there was a lot of stigma with it. And mentally, I was really affected, and emotionally. And I didn't know how to deal with that at age 9. I figured out really quick how to deal with my emotions. And I dealt with it with food, video games, and movies. If I ate certain types of foods, I'd feel better in the moment. And it wasn't like I was eating healthy foods, right? It's not like I'm sitting eating a big bowl of salad saying, wow, this makes me feel happy. Keep doing that day after day. And if you just, your sedentary lifestyle, like for me, was playing video games and watching movies. I mean, my weight just kept going up. Unfortunately, by the time I got to 15, my mom took me to the doctor this one time, and Dr. Quinn pulls my mom aside. Your son is morbidly obese. Now, I didn't know what those two words meant, but it didn't sound good, right? I didn't need the doctor to tell me I felt bad myself, because that's just how I felt. That was every day, you know. Like, kids were mean when I was younger, but teenagers are cruel, and dealing with bullying and the ridicule and the snickering behind my back, like it was really tough, you know. But it was weird, right? One day I was at my dad's place for the weekend, and I just had this switch that flipped in me. I was more afraid of not changing than the idea of changing. I know it's not going to get any easier than it is right now. That 15, that was a realization I had, because I was like, man, okay, when I'm 20, if I haven't made any changes and I keep doing what I've been doing for this last 5 years, I'm not going to feel any better than I do right now. And I don't feel very good right now. I go to the washroom after having this realization, look at myself in the mirror, and I'm like, Dad, I want to get healthy. And he saw something in my eyes that day. And I'm so grateful that I had parents that were willing to support me when I asked for help. Because he just said, what can I do to help you? And I was like, you know, yeah, I used to like riding a bike. Can we go get me a bike? Because I wasn't going to go to a gym, Stephen. Like, there's no way in hell I'm going in there, you know? Like,
it's very daunting, yeah.
It is. And I get it. It doesn't matter who you are. You could even be the fittest person on the planet. If you've never been into a space like that, it's intimidating. You know? It is, because I didn't know how to get healthy. And I was also very shy, because I was very I dealt with some social anxiety at that time as well. And because I self-isolated a lot of the time, I avoided public situations because I just felt so bad about myself. So that also, on top of that, going into a place where I feel that people would be just looking at me and judging me, I was like, no way in hell am I going in there. But I always liked riding a bike. And my dad literally, like that afternoon, like within a matter of 4 or 5 hours after having that conversation, he went and bought me a mountain bike. Got home with that bike and I went for a bike ride. I went for a bike ride every day. I went to the library one day. I got books out. And my kids are like, Dad, why don't you just Google? I'm like, I'm older than Google, kids. You know, like, yeah. People just don't get that, right? So, you know, I educated myself on how to eat, on foods, on supplements, on nutrition, on just how food is fuel. Start figuring out how to fuel myself for the kind of the life that I wanted. And more importantly, the kind of person I wanted to be. And you know, that set in motion literally a 2-year journey to release all that weight. And by age 17, I had a new lifestyle. I had a new physique. I had a new sense of confidence. You know, I still felt internally like that morbidly obese teenager, but I got really good at putting on a facade to say, oh yeah, you know, I'm the dude, you know, like, you know, people would say, what was the main motivation? And I was like, oh, I kind of wanted a girlfriend, you know, like that's what I wanted, man. Like, I'm being honest with you. Like, that was like, I just wanted somebody that wanted me. Made those changes, and I didn't really look back since. But at 17, you know, I remember a friend of my mom's coming to the house and literally sitting me down and saying, can you help us get healthy? And, you know, I'm at 17. I never believed I had value to offer people. We're like, we've seen the changes you've done over the last couple of years. We know you know what you're doing. Can you help us? I started to help them, and they started getting results, and I felt so fulfilled. I don't care what I do with the rest of my life. This is going to be part of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what set in motion, coaching and training and
going back to something you said in there. I don't know that everybody understands this, but body dysmorphia is very real.
Yeah. Oh, and gosh, yeah.
People see you a certain way, like they saw you as fit. What did that take, I guess, to see yourself as fit? Because for years, you're going to look in the mirror and see the kid that started at 15, not the kid that has worked out for 2 years and, you know, changed. Were you able to overcome that?
Like, this is the crazy thing about trauma. You know, you can cure physical ailments, right? Like physical scars. You break a bone, you can see that heals. You know, maybe you cut yourself. Well, there's a little scar there that reminds you. But, you know, that mental and emotional damage that we do to ourselves or that happens to us, it always lingers, you know, to some capacity. And it doesn't matter how much therapy you go through and how much support you get and how loved you might even feel. The psychology that we deal with and that mindset, that mental health piece of that makes us who we are, it's always there in some capacity, you know, and I'm not here to be, you know, pessimistic about this. I'm speaking the truth. You know, like, there's a lot of research that validates this around trauma. You know, it's always there, but we learn how to develop more resiliency. There's times, though, when I'm feeling low, when I'm having a bad day, I'll catch myself in the mirror and, you know I'm healthy. I know I'm fit, but every once in a while, that little fat kid, he starts talking to me, right? Myself, I'm not that person anymore. I've changed. I'm someone different now. You know, there's a lot of years between that point in time and where I am now. Not to say that every once in a while, some of those emotions come up again. You know, I've learned tools to be able to say, oh, I know what's happening right now. I've learned to navigate it a bit more effectively. I've learned to be able to move apart from it, even when it shows up at times.
That would help somebody that might be fighting it now, is it gets better. Slow progress is still progress. So starting at 17 and starting to help other people, is that what led to maybe the book that you have now?
I'll tell you this. Especially in my early 20s as a personal trainer, I was not a very good personal trainer. Okay. Only because I had gone through so much change myself. And I know it was my dedication, my commitment, but also the consistency and frequency with which I prioritized my health. I'm never going back to where I was. So it became easy to create this new lifestyle because I was just so committed to it. And it made me feel good internally and externally. And, you know, I would often be training people that were quite a bit older than me, you know, people in their 30s and 40s, you know, just in a different period of life, different season. And I used to have the thing, you know, I used to believe no pain, no gain. I used to also believe, hey, suck it up, buttercup. You know, like a lot of those old ideas, that's what I believed because I thought that's the mentality you needed to navigate these health changes. I just wasn't a very empathetic trainer or coach. And so I got into the equipment industry because at least it was commission based. So it's performance based. So the more people I helped with getting the right tools to help them with their health and well-being, the more money I made. And I was like, this is kind of neat. I never worked in a pay structure like that. I always been hours for dollars. I'd work so many hours, train so many clients, I'd make so much money. It was just a shift for me. It was a valuable shift because I realized if I get really good at something and at helping people, create an impact in their lives, the income is quite limitless, you know? Like there is no cap to that. You know, there's no limit to how many people I can impact. That's a good lesson to learn in my early 20s because that's sort of a focus that stuck with me ever since then, you know, is this idea of leveraging time, trying to impact more people with less time even. Once I got into my early 30s, went through some changes myself again. My TED talk I did last year talks about my struggle with alcohol and specifically some of the changes that I made. And during that process afterwards, I started to offer free Sunday classes, workout classes. We call them Sunday Funday, sometimes Sunday Funday throwdowns, right? And we had this great community of people. Sometimes on Sundays, we'd have 100 people come in. There's no cost, no hidden agenda. It was simply come if you want to get around positive people that all want to see their health and well-being improve. You have to be supportive, but you also have to be ready to get a good sweat on. It was actually like a petri dish for me. You know, it was my little testing grounds for trying different coaching methodologies. I'd have people down to like 16 years old all the way up to like 76 years old. We had the whole gamut in there. But I was able to try all these different types of training and coaching and supporting people I was able to distill down what was working, what wasn't working, into literally what became the book. It just teaches people how to leverage 2% of every 24 hours. 2% is only 30 minutes a day. Just to sort of put this into the context for people, if you make yourself a priority, that 30 minutes is non-negotiable. It's a commitment that you're always going to keep, and you keep it for 28 days straight. So it's 15 minutes of movement, 5 minutes of mindful meditation, 10 minutes of personal development. So feeding that muscle between the ears, I don't care who you are, you're going to see some great changes. We saw that happen with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people. And then when the book came out, it's been thousands of people now that have been positively impacted by that. It just made me feel really good, you know, like that, that I was able to help those individuals with getting started.
Sometimes the hardest thing to do is just take that first step. So if you can convince somebody that trying is the way to go, 28 days, if you don't like it, quit. But at the end of 28 days, that may open up a lot more possibilities.
That's exactly what happened, which is super interesting. I've had people go on to do marathons, hike mountains, tough mudders, you know, like there's one lady, Carol, she just got back from competing in a Masters Olympic weightlifting competition. You know, like she's in her 50s and she just came in silver, right? Like, yeah, but when she came to me, she was quite a bit overweight. She wasn't really into fitness yet. You know, she started with us, she went into CrossFit, and then she discovered she loved Olympic weightlifting. She's been doing it almost 15 years now. Like, it's just, it's awesome to see what happens when you develop that self-confidence. Belief that you yourself can do things that you didn't think you could do before. I always get so excited when I see people really, that light switch turn on above their head, you know, like the light bulb goes off and they're like, wow, I can't do this. It's just, it's a wonderful feeling. And I'm sure you see this all the time when you're coaching kids and adults, and it doesn't matter, right? Like when you see that twinkle in their eye, they're like, wow, I just did that. And last week I couldn't do that. They're hooked for life now, right? It's great.
Yeah, they realize they can set goals, work towards that goal and achieve it. You know, there's nothing better than that. That's just a great feeling to know that you help somebody achieve a major goal that they had out there.
It's fun. I get a lot of fulfillment from it. And that's why, you know, when I was 17, I got bit by that coaching bug, right? I was like, whoa, I get to help people do this. I like this. This makes me feel good. I think I could do this like the rest of my life. It doesn't even feel like work. This is fun.
Now through all this, this has led you to quite a few different things. You've been able to travel quite a bit. You've been all around the world. It doesn't seem like there's ever been a challenge that you've ever backed down from, I guess.
My wife will attest to this. Like when I get something in my head, I'm a little bit stubborn. Like I just like, you know, you tell me no, I can't do something, I'm going to be like, oh yeah, watch me. You know, like I'm that kind of guy where and it's weird, right? Like I get doubly motivated when someone challenges me or says, you know, I don't think you can do that. You know, like I love it when people say that to me because I'm like, you know what? Just because you said it, I'm going to do it, you know, like, but my last career, you know, it was 17 years working in the fitness equipment space. And I was very fortunate. I got into a position in a previous company, and then the partner there, one of the founding partners, let's just say they decided to have a divorce with the national company. He decided to go off as an independent. And well, I was the top guy in this national company, and I happened to work in his locations here in Western Canada. And he's like, hey, man, you know, I got this opportunity for you. Would you like to come and help me start up this new company? And I was like, yeah, sure, man. Like I was young. I was excited. I was good at what I did. I wanted an opportunity. You know, I always treated every career I worked in as if I owned the place. That's what set me apart from everybody else I'd always worked with. It's also what allowed me to excel beyond a lot of the people that had been in it. Like I had guys that were 20 years my senior as my managers, and within 6 months, I was outpacing them. I'm not bragging here. I'm just saying that's my work ethic. My mom, my dad, they were the same way. It didn't matter what they did professionally. They were just like, treat it as if you own it, you know, like take that accountability, right? That position. And if you do that, good things happen. And sure enough, you know, good things are happening. I was able to get into a place where I was given a sweat equity position, but I had the energy and I had the work ethic. So he was willing to invest in me through mentorship and supporting me. And then on top of that, it gave me an opportunity to come on board and start this new company. And sure enough, you know, like we built it up to 8 figures a year, you know, over that 17-year span. And I was a junior partner. I wasn't a major partner because, again, sweat equity. You know, even when I exited out, it's not like I made enough money to retire off of or anything. No, not at all. But I just got to a place where I wasn't feeling fulfilled by that work any longer. I changed as a man, as a father, as a business owner, as a husband. Like I had changed so dynamically over that time that I wanted something new, something different. I left that industry and you know, the book was published right around the same time. And I was already doing stuff in the online space as well. And so when my wife and I looked at things and, you know, we had a conversation with each other, it was multiple conversations because she was someone that always wished that she could travel. She told me this on our first date. She told me, you know, one of my dreams is that I can travel with my family when they're older. You know, once we have kids, that I want to be able to travel with my family, but extended periods. And I was like, wow, that sounds crazy. She was patient with me. She gave 16, 17 years of just letting me do what I was doing and staying put. But then, you know, I changed. And I was like, well, what if? It turned into almost 5 years of us traveling. But we need to deal with the kids that if they ever wanted to finish high school back in Vancouver, we would honor that. They said, hey, we want to go back to Vancouver and finish high school. And so we came back. I have a faith and, you know, I believe things happen for a reason. And 2 months later, lockdown happened, right? Like, it's just the weirdest of things that how things work out. But it was nice to be back in Vancouver to ride out the pandemic, you know? My youngest is almost done. She's got her last year of high school right now. And then I don't know. But for now, Vancouver's home.
So when you came back to Vancouver, like you said, it's the middle of the pandemic. That's really affecting the fitness industry. That's closing gym. Did you just use your online presence and your book sales to manage to make it? Or what did you have to do?
I'm going to be honest with you. Book sales? Like, anybody tells you they make a lot of money on a book, they must be a J.K. Rowling or a Stephen King. Because I didn't make any money with my book. I mean, you sell them, but you barely make any. Like, it's, but it, there are speaking opportunities and there's other partnership opportunities that came from the book, which was a wonderful part of my income. But a lot of it was event-based. I'd be speaking or doing retreats and that kind of stuff. So obviously the pandemic was like, none of that's happening. So that part of my income disappeared, but I was coaching people and mentoring people, but online. And so that part of my business, I was very fortunate I still had. And the kind of people that I worked with, you know, executives, high performers, CEOs, founders, that kind of thing, their industries weren't largely affected to the point that they would stop my services, you know, because the health and well-being piece and that optimization piece was still a priority for them. And so they maintained that investment. And so I just continued to do that throughout. And then, you know, after about 6 months of the pandemic, the first 6 months, things started to bounce back again. The first 6 months were pretty scary, though. I'm not going to lie. You know, I was like, holy smokes, what am I going to do? You know, I don't even know if I can go get a job right now if I had to. You know, like, I always joke with people. I'm like, you know, I don't think I'd make a very good employee for you.
So do you find that most of your coaching now is online, or do you go into a gym and have walk-in customers? How do you do that?
Yeah. So I don't have any more brick and mortar, but interesting enough, like I discovered CrossFit back in the late 2000s. And I was very fortunate. A good friend of mine opened up one of the very first CrossFit gyms in Canada, and it was actually here in Vancouver. And I remember selling him some equipment and him saying, hey, you want to come try out this thing? And I'm like, what is this thing? And he goes, well, it's called CrossFit. And I'm like, cross what? You know? And I remember going in to try it. And he took me through this sort of baseline fitness testing type stuff, right? I got spanked, Stephen. I was just spanked. I was like, what the hell? I thought I was a pretty fit guy. Obviously, I'm not that fit. And I was like, well, I'm coming back because this just pissed me off. And so I just come coming back. And I what was more for me was the community piece. Like, that is what really got me going, was the thing that I found that CrossFit, that was the best thing that they did for the industry as a whole, was really reminding us of the power of community when it comes to fitness. And professional sports know this, like, you know, that camaraderie on a team. Again, remember, I didn't come from teams. I didn't play sports because I'm a big fat kid, right? Like, I'd always be the kid that was picked last, and there was always like, we don't really want to pick you, you know? And I hate to laugh at it. I'm laughing at myself, but that was the situation I was in, right? So I never played sports. So that was my first foray into something that was group orientated, and I loved it. Then I got into Olympic weightlifting, doing that a lot more. My body completely changed, and my mentality of fitness changed as well. And now I'm not like just a full CrossFit convict here. I'm not like, I did drink the Kool-Aid a long time ago, but I've since given the Kool-Aid back. But there's elements of it that I still absolutely passionate about. As such, I've coached in CrossFit for many, many years, about 10 years now. I'm a fill-in guy. So for my buddy that owns a CrossFit gym, it's just saying, hey, if you ever need some coverage, just let me know. It'll be fun. So just as of recent, I've started doing that again. And it's like one class here and there, you know, it's nothing major because most of my business is just all online. You know, it's a better fit for my lifestyle. And I work with people all around the world, and that's the advantage of working online. You're not really limited by you know, physical location, right? So I don't have boundaries I have to deal with anymore.
And CrossFit's very interesting. we don't do a lot of it out at our gym, but it is done probably more for the weightlifting in public eye, let's say, than strongman, bodybuilding, and powerlifting, Olympic lifting, probably all put together. You know, there is a lot of people out there CrossFitting.
But it's also brought a lot of interest and a lot more eyeballs to all those other sports that you mentioned. You know, like I just didn't even look at the Arnold, right? Like it's completely changed, right? Like it's got a huge component to it now that is more fitness oriented and competition oriented. It's not just bodybuilding anymore, right? Like it's, there's physique. There's the strongman competitions, right? Like there's, it's just neat to see that. And even like the mud run component, like that whole element, a lot of in the early days, like with the Spartan races, CrossFitters were the ones that were attracted to that. You know, they were the ones showing up in droves, like whole gyms would sign up to go and do it together, you know, like, so that community has done a lot for the industry. And then there's two sides to every coin, you know, there's some good and there's some bad. And I like to think that under the new leadership that CrossFit has now, they're addressing a lot of the challenges that were there. But, you know, any organization that grows so quickly, like literally overnight, it just exploded. You're going to have a lot of problems. It's okay. I'm very grateful for it. It's just a different way of training. Is it the only way of training? Hell no. I don't train just CrossFit. I actually do very little CrossFit. I do functional fitness. I have a priority on longevity with vitality. You know, I want to live a long life, but I want to live a long life where I'm optimal. Because if I just go high intensity all the time, my body ain't going to last. And I'm actually fitter now and healthier now and stronger and faster now than I was in my 20s. You know, so there's something to that.
Right. You can mix the Olympic lifts like you were talking about with the CrossFit. Yeah. If you're CrossFitting every day, that is a toll on your body. That's incredible amount of volume at high speeds. You know, you start getting up in the 40, mid 40s, 50s. Yeah. Things start breaking pretty quick.
I've got two hernias to prove it. My doctor's like, if you tear this one more time, I'm not going to do the surgery. You're going to have to live with it the rest of your life. I was like, what? No, so I had to adapt also my training because I'm more sensitive. So my new mantra now is 70% is my 100%. I go 70% maximum effort. I'm not here to impress anybody. I'm here to be well and hopefully be around and be able to chase my grandkids around the way I chase my kids around. Like, that's my focus now.
Your work into the Olympic list, how'd that go? I mean, that's a pretty technical sport.
When I got into CrossFit, I just started taking a lot of courses. So anytime that different level of coaches would come to town, and that was the thing, to get a lot of these coaches like Bergman, every time he'd come to Vancouver, I'd try to go and attend the 2-day. BC Weightlifting Association has been around for, man, a long time. So there's some nice private Olympic lifting clubs here in Vancouver as well. So there was access to really high level coaching. Some people that have competed in the Olympics, just really good coaches, right? So I recognized CrossFit was limited in the depth of knowledge, because to get good at doing an Olympic snatch, you got to do a lot of training, but you need a lot of coaching. It gets so technical. I don't know anything else that's more technical than that. Probably actually hitting a fastball, you know, like from a professional pitcher. I mean, I have a better chance of doing my body weight as a snatch than I ever do of hitting a baseball, you know, coming at me at 120 miles an hour. There's very few things that require that level of technicality. And, but that's the reason why I love it as well, because of the brain health benefit, you know, that body connection, that neural load that you get from Olympic weightlifting. I mean, you want to stay healthy, you want to stay sharp. I think there's elements of Olympic weightlifting that can benefit anybody under the right conditions, of course, right coaching, of course. It's a slow curve, and I don't go heavy, like 185-pound snatch. I'm okay with that. You know, I'm not looking to do any of it, because every time I tried to go heavier than that back in the day, I competed in the Western Canadian Finals 1 year, and L4, L5 injury, because it took me 9 months to rehab that. First month, I could barely move. And I was like, gosh, if I get better, I promise I'm going to do things differently. And you know, that you make that promise, you know, you're just looking up at the sky, and you're like, come on, man, just let me be better. I promise I won't do this again. And so I was negotiating with anybody and everyone. And fortunately, when I got better, I was like, no, I'm never doing that again. And so it's just being smart, right?
Yeah, you can overdo it real fast. That's what always concerns me with some of the, you know, high school weight rooms. They want to incorporate the Olympic lifts. Well, you know, the Olympic lifts are so technical. You get overseas into Russia and China where they're really good at that. Those kids are doing it from a very young age, spending years just on a broomstick.
You do the dowel, do that for 20 minutes, man. Like, you're going to be sore the next day. Like, really, like, you don't need that much weight at all. I do some of my work is just with an empty bar. You know, that's all. It's all I'll use, but I'll do a lot of volume and really focus on technique, but also alignment and body positioning, you know, and it's a great workout, you know, like, and I feel good for it. So, and then I can train the next day too, right? Like, it's not like I'm so sore I can't walk for a week. There are some benefits to some of the lists, you know, like cleans or power cleans and stuff like that, I think is a lot safer. And, you know, those are just all broken down elements of Olympic lifts. But you're right. Like for younger demographics, I think that's the way to go. Don't worry about the Olympic snatch. Don't even the clean and jerks, man. Like, no, do a clean or do a jerk. You don't need to do them both together. You know, like, again, you're doing this so you play well on the field. This isn't your primary sport. Now, if it's your primary sport, that's a different conversation. But this is to help what sport you're playing, right? It's not meant to be the sport. So,
yeah, you're looking for a lot of carryover. Maybe that's why they look to the Olympic lifts, is because they're explosive lifts, you know, and they're full body movements. I understand that. But, you know, as you know, and you've explained, there's a lot of time that goes into that. In the 4 years of kids in high school, it's very hard to teach them that lift. What's your favorite thing to coach you?
I like group fitness. And when I mean that, like, it's the actual interaction that I love the most. Whatever it is that's programmed on the day or whatever it is that we're working on, I'm fine with that. It's just getting around people that are there because they want to be there, but they also want to get better. I know I can help people, because when you understand how to coach and how to help people get more of themselves, you know, how to be encouraging, uplifting. But, and this is the sign of a good coach from a great coach, is that ability to see the potential in somebody, but not only see it, help tease it out of them. And once you understand that, it doesn't matter what sport, what movement, you can probably help the person. Again, I'm not going to really coach Olympic lifts because I don't have enough experience for that. I can break it down. I can look at someone that's got some basic skills and I can help improve them with some of the cueing and whatnot. But these are novice people, right? Not professional athletes. Like, I'm not going to be coaching professional athletes. I'm working with people that are really looking at more lifestyle element. They want to be healthy. They want to be happy. They want to be able to perform well in whatever they do. But it's life stop orientated results, not necessarily sport specific results. And so that sort of the differentiation for the kind of stuff I like to coach. I'm more into the lifestyle side of things. That's the stuff I love to do. If I help you have more fun in everyday life outside of the gym, by you in the gym, that's stuff I like.
Yeah, you want to see people excited and ready to show up to the gym, not walking through, dragging their bag behind them, hating to be there.
That's right. That's right. But also, like, think about it. You go to the gym 3 times a week. Let's just say some people, you know, they're going 3 days a week. That's 3 hours. Well, there's still 165 hours in that week. What do you do with those 165? And that's what I'm most interested in, because that's where the impact in everybody around you happens, in your families, in your communities, globally, right? Like in our companies that we work at. Like, if I can help people show up differently in those other 165 hours by helping them with those 3 hours, I love it, you know? But it's that connection that we help them make between the two. I think the real workout happens outside the gym, you know, in the gym's fun. That's playtime, you know, but the work happens outside. That's where we want to be performing our best. The gym just reminds us that we can handle a lot of hard stuff and we're okay for it. We are resilient. We can do the hard stuff, you know? So when you're outside and you get hard stuff coming at you, it's like, you know, this isn't that bad. Yesterday, man, those handstand push-ups and that Olympic lifting, holy crap, that was hard. Today, you know, this disagreement with my wife, it's not really that hard. I can deal with this, you know?
No, I get that for sure. Well, I know I've ran well over your time, and I had a wonderful time talking to you, but I appreciate you taking some time and coming on the show. Maybe one day in the future, we can talk some more lifting and working out. And you're just an incredible guy with everything you've done. So thank you so much, Guy.
Thanks, Stephen. And, you know, just in closing, I just want to say thank you, you know, for just... It takes a lot of time and effort and energy to create what you're creating, to create a space for these conversations to happen. And you know, there's a lot of people that get to tune in and listen to the end product, but they don't realize all the stuff that happens behind the scenes to make this possible. And I just want to acknowledge you for doing this, because all that effort goes in to make this impact, to create that ripple effect and allow all of us to be flies on the wall to listen in on these. And I just want to say thank you. You know, thank you for putting that time in to create this, because, you know, the world needs more of this, quite frankly. It really does. And it's inspiring to see you doing this. So I just want to say thanks. I was honored for the opportunity today to be here.
Well, thank you very much. And I hope you have a good rest of your day. Take a L no more. Never take a damn thing slow. All I know is chase this day.